Hello and welcome to the College Football Experience Podcast. My name is David Capel. I'm joined by Kent Brown. Kent, let's jump into things we learned last week. And we'll start with Purdue and you.
Yeah, so Purdue, I mean, look, I didn't think Purdue would beat Ohio State. I thought that they would probably find a way to cover. But the one thing we need to keep remembering, when Purdue beats top five teams, it's when they're unranked.
Right.
They went in against Iowa, knocked them off. Went in against Michigan State, knocked them off. And then they got that top 20 ranking, and that's when Purdue is the team that you shouldn't bet for. Remember years ago, they beat Ohio State with Rondell Moore. They weren't ranked that week. So overall, Ohio State showed up offensively. They were terrific. They're still giving up quite a few points, and that is a big issue going forward, especially when you have Michigan State this Saturday, Michigan the following Saturday, and then a potential matchup with a Wisconsin team that's been better. That's not the easiest slate of games to close out your season, but it was a great offensive performance, and I think I was foolish to think that Purdue, with the ranking next to their name, was going to show up and be somewhat competitive.
Yeah, that was the carriage turned into a pumpkin for this Cinderella team. Let's talk about another team that's struggling a little bit after last week, and that's Oklahoma, finally losing the games after playing – almost everybody close this year. I know they came off of a big win against Texas Tech the week before, and you're like, okay, maybe they started to figure it out. Nope, Baylor comes in, Baylor at home, and puts up 27 on them. They only allow two touchdowns. And, you know, we were talking about this game off air. Baylor kind of was in control of this game the whole time and really exposed Oklahoma for the team we've known them to be, but they found ways to win the rest of the year. They couldn't do it this week.
Yeah, this is not the Oklahoma offense that they've had the last 5 or 6 years. They have the capability, they have good receivers, good running backs, good quarterbacks, but in this game, you saw Caleb Williams struggled. They moved on from him, went back to Spencer Rattler, he didn't do much, and then ultimately Caleb Williams had a garbage time touchdown late that got them to 14 points. This Oklahoma defense has taken a major step back. A lot of us thought, or some of us thought, that picked Oklahoma preseason to be number one or number two, that this defense would be a top 30, top 25 type of defense. It is probably a borderline top 80 or top 90 defense. And this year, when their offense has been inconsistent, that's not good enough to keep winning games week in and week out. Now, on the other hand, if they go and beat the rest of their schedule and they knock off Iowa State and then they beat Oklahoma State and then they have a rematch against Oklahoma State, that might be good enough to get them back in the playoff mix. But for now, this is just not an Oklahoma team that's looked the part all year. And I have a feeling that soon enough, they're going to have their second, maybe even third loss by the end of the season.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I don't know if it is enough. We're not going to talk about the poll much this week since the top seven didn't change. But they were the ones knocking at the door at 8. And to drop down to 13, I think it becomes a little bit too much to get back into it. So
It probably is. And the fact that the committee had them at 8 when they were 9-0 shows you what the committee thought about them. I think the committee has shown in the past they'll give teams the benefit of the doubt if they have that 0 next to their loss column. But for OU to be ranked 8 and be behind so many one-loss teams when they were undefeated, that showed you that the
including
committee did not value them as a real contender. So you're probably right that this loss most likely dropped them out. But they still have a lot to play for, and anytime Oklahoma gets to Arlington, Texas in a Big 12 title game, they become the team that's expected to win that because they never lose that game. So there's still a lot to play for, but that was a very bad, disappointing loss on Saturday, and Baylor was the better team, and now we're seeing Dave Aranda being mentioned nationally on a lot more coaching searches.
Everywhere. Yeah, I know we take him at USC. Hey, let's move on to the biggest upset of the week, and Kent, I texted you during this game saying, hey, I'm feeling good. I have Kansas as in a teaser, plus 37. By the end, I was mad at the bet because I wish I had taken them outright. That would have been way better value. But Kansas upsets Texas at DKR in overtime. And really, they're lucky that it got – Texas is lucky that it even got to overtime. Kansas had just been running on them – running it up on them, excuse me. In was it 57-55 game. And, man, what is going on at Texas?
Yeah, it's just a lost cause right now with the season
Five in
where
a
it
row,
looked,
five losses in a row right now.
yeah, it looked somewhat promising early. They ended up blowing that game against Oklahoma, and since that moment, they can't get going. Five straight losses for the first time since, I believe, like the 50s or 60s.
50s,
It's
yeah.
never happened in our lifetime. And look, you lose to Kansas. It's one thing if you came
I
into
said that
this game.
I said that they just lost to Daryl K. Royal. Daryl K. Royal was still 4 years away from becoming a student at Texas last time they lost five games in a row.
Oh my God. And
Yeah.
look, Kansas had never won there, I believe. I
Never.
think this was the first
They've only
time.
beat them three times.
Yeah, it's so crazy. It's so crazy that they lost this game. Especially, it's not like, as I said, it's not like they came into this game 6-1 or 6-2 or 7-1 where, like, okay, they've had a good season and somehow, some way they blew it. This is now a team that you can say the last month has been worse than Kansas. Kansas
Yeah.
almost beat OU. Kansas beat Texas. Texas now with five straight losses. They're in that bottom tier of the Big 12, and I don't think they get out of it this year. Now, of course, Robinson's still there another season. I think quarterback
Even though he's
wise,
out for the rest of the season.
yeah, I think quarterback wise, they found ways to be like, we have some future guys we trust, but defensively, things need to get better. Offensively, they don't have great skill talent. I like Worthy, the freshman, but the rest of the skill talent outside looks to be, group of five type of level and not power five. So the Texas Longhorns are going to have to really reload. And not to mention, chances are 2 years from now, they're in the SEC. I think that will get done
Yeah.
sooner rather than later. So next year's probably their final year in the Big 12 if everything goes well for them and OU. And they do not look like a Big 12 contender, let alone an SEC contender.
No, I think they were getting some facetious SEC chants after that game, after that loss to Kansas, and man, that was ugly. But you know what? You gotta look on the other side and be glad for Leipold, the coach at Kansas. I don't want to say he's building something, but I mean the streaks that he broke last week were insane. 56 straight road losses in the Big 12, 18 losses to Power 5 schools, a few others that were just mind-blowing. They had not won a game on the road in the Big 12 since 2008. That's how long it had been, Kent, since I was in college. And now I have three children, which by the way, I had a child this weekend. The
Exactly
last
right.
one, baby boy. But 13 years ago, kids were the last thing on my mind. Drinking and other college football was on my mind, and that's when Kansas won their last game. So, props to them. And you know, before this podcast, you and I were talking about whether this puts Sark on the hot seat. You said not yet. I think he already is because he was a terrible hire when it happened. But let's talk about guys that aren't even on the hot seat anymore because they're out. Fuente out at Virginia Tech. We already know about LSU. We already know that Texas Tech rehired USC. A lot of job openings. Jimmy Lake up in Washington is now out. And then there's three or four other guys that are on the hot seat. Hopefully your guy Manny Diaz at Miami, maybe Dan Mullen at Florida as well. Could be a big shakeup this year in the coaching carousel.
Yeah, Saturday was definitely the low point of the Manny Diaz era. They lose to Florida State. And the way they lost, just undisciplined football, didn't show up early, were down huge, mounted a comeback, had chances to close the game out in the fourth quarter, decided to punt the ball away when they'd been aggressive all second half. And then fourth and 14, under a minute left, you make that stop, Florida State can't win the game, and it's an easy completion inside the 2-yard line, and then the Seminoles go to win. The only positive out of that was, maybe Manny Diaz is now on his way out. Just as of this week, Blake James, the athletic director, officially fired from Miami. And I think they needed that to happen first in order to get to the Manny Diaz firing, because it wouldn't have made much sense to fire Diaz with an AD that's on the hot seat or probably is getting fired.
Sure.
Now you hope in the next couple of weeks you can get an athletic director in place, and then that athletic director's first real statement is, I'm firing Manny Diaz and my coach is coming in. The same way that Danny White came into Tennessee and took Josh Heupel, something like that. So
Right.
overall, I do like the direction of where Miami is this week, because I don't think that Manny Diaz would have gotten fired unless the AD was fired. So now the first domino fell. You hope the second one soon follows in the next couple of weeks. It's just not a team that plays well. Like, I've heard from some people that the practices are just not the way a top 25 program conducts practices. Manny Diaz's defense, which is his unit, just doesn't perform well. They continue to lead the nation in missed tackles. And then offensively, they do have some young talent. I think whatever coach comes in is going to be excited to coach up the young talent on offense. But this is not a team that looks to be an ACC contender, and the ACC is pretty weak right now. So overall, it's just it's not going well, and I hope 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now, Manny Diaz is officially out and Miami can be on that market.
Okay, you could – I mean, we're talking about some crazy job openings right now. Obviously, at the top of the list, USC, LSU, Texas Tech already been filled. Virginia Tech and Washington are both big jobs. And then, like we said, maybe Florida, Miami, potentially USC – or, excuse me, UCLA could all be opening. But then the crazy part is the knock-on. Let's say Penn State – or what's his name? Franklin, that opens up Penn State. Aranda leaves Baylor, that opens up Baylor. All of a sudden, we're hearing Lincoln Riley to LSU. I think that's just the rumor mill, but that could open up Oklahoma. This could be the biggest year in a long time for coaching moves if all of this stuff starts to play out. I'd be interested to see it.
Yeah, I saw something this week that was funny that somebody sent. I think it was one of the Irish Sports Daily writers, and he said, if you want to know what Brian Kelly has meant to Notre Dame, and then dot, 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 they're not Texas. They're not USC, they're not Miami, they're not Florida, they're not Florida State. Like, he's given them consistency, where Notre Dame used to be in this job hunt every 3, 4, 5 years, starting in, you know, the late 90s into, you know, the Brian Kelly era of 2010, where Bob Davey was shaky, kept his job, got fired. Tyrone Willingham was shaky, got fired. Charlie Weiss was shaky, got fired. There's a lot of programs that have just been in this spiral, and you know, the good programs seem to be like, okay, yes, they have a coach, they trust him. Maybe the guy can't beat Alabama or Clemson or Ohio State consistently, but he's not also giving up 42 points to an FCS team the way that the Florida Gators were in right. the first half. And look, Dan Mullen, we mentioned last week, would Mullen be one of those guys? It's not looking good for him. Clearly, their team did not show up this Saturday. Right. I understand if you happen to just maybe give up a pick six or one fumble return for a
stupid
score.
They were getting blown off the ball in the first
half. Yeah, when you're giving up 42 points to a mid-tier to bottom-tier FCS goal.
In a
that,
half.
Yeah, that shows that your defense just didn't want to show up and didn't want to play.
Kept most points allowed in a half in Florida history, and it was done by Samford in 2021.
Oh, God. Yeah, you're not Stanford,
it.
Samford.
Yeah. My dad was watching. He's not a college football fan. He was out here for the birth of the kid. And he's like, Samford, what is that?
Right.
Like, he had never heard of Samford.
Yeah, I remember I first heard of them as a kid. They made one of those NCAA tournaments. And, you know, you'd have to fill out your bracket. And I thought it was a typo because back then I'd get a piece of paper. You'd fill out the bracket. And I'm like, wait a second. What's Samford? And, yeah, it's some school in Alabama that's, you know, I believe that's where Bobby Bowden finished his
exactly.
playing
that's
career.
All. That's all I knew about it was that Bobby Bowden came from there, and I think he was their coach. He was their coach from 59 to 60. I'm looking it up right now. 59 to 62, and then he actually then he started his career at West Virginia, Florida State, went to West Virginia for a while, then back to Florida State, and we know how that went. But, yeah, he put them on the map a little bit. But, man, that was reminiscent of – who was it, Georgia Southern a few years ago that beat beat Florida and
yeah, they
ended
did it without a passing yard
there.
Just a triple option the entire game.
That's right. Yeah. So but yeah, that was it's going to be interesting. The coaching carousel this year, you know, there's a lot of big name jobs and not a lot of big name guys. So it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out, who the winners and losers are going to be. Like I said, we're going to skip the top 25 poll. Let's jump right into our six pack of games this week, and got a big one in the Big Ten. Number 7 Michigan State heading to number 4 Ohio State. Ohio State kind of calmed the doubters a little bit last week after that whooping of Purdue. They're 18.5 point favorites here. Not a lot of respect for Michigan State. And I wonder if this isn't a little bit of a not a trap game. This is a big game for Ohio State, obviously. But Michigan State had their loss, had their season kind of slip away for a second, and then they have a nice comeback week. And now they're like, hey, let's get back on track. Let's be the football team that we've been all year. I like them to keep this game close. I like Ohio State to win, but I like Michigan State to cover and outside chance of pulling an upset.
Yeah, the one thing that's just really worrisome, though, is the fact that how bad Michigan State's pass defense is. It's the worst in the country, and it's on pace to be, I believe, the worst in 18 years in college football in terms of pass yardage per game allowed. So the Michigan State defense up front has done a good job stopping the run, but they give up so many pass yards. And for Ohio State, we know what they do well. I mean, they have 3 future NFL receivers, all right. of which I think 2 of them are like Biletnikoff's semifinalist, and all 3 of them could be the best player on the field in any given day. This could be C.J. Stroud's Heisman game, where if he puts up 400 pass yards and they win this game 38-17, he does become the definitive guy to beat, in my opinion, for that trophy. And he's had games where he didn't even look over all that good at times, but this has everything written to say Ohio State shows up, plays well, wins dominantly, and Stroud now becomes the guy heading into the Michigan game as the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman. So I'm going to go with Ohio State here. I think they roll. Just the fact that that Michigan State pass defense is so poor, I just don't think they'll have an answer to stop Ohio State. I hope it's close. I want it to be close. I'd love to watch this game and have it mean something with 7 minutes left. I'm afraid it won't.
Yeah, we'll see. I think we're both going against this one a little bit. I will say, like, everyone was kind of up in arms about Michigan getting put ahead of Michigan State. And then they compared the two teams, and they're like, yeah, Michigan State beat them, but Michigan has been X amount better in every other statistical category. And kind of showed that Michigan State is the team that we kind of know who they are, and they're not great. They've just found ways to win. And that's what I'm hoping to see here, is just them finding ways to keep it close. But on paper, they look like they should get their doors blown off. So, and this isn't the best matchup for them with Ohio State. Let's move on to another ranked matchup. This one out in the Pac-12. Yes, the Pac-12 has a ranked matchup in Week 12. I know it's hard to believe. Number 3 Oregon at number 23 Utah, and Utah 3-point favorites here. Oregon has been disrespected by Vegas this whole season. This is probably like the third or fourth game where they're underdogs this season as a top 5 opponent.
Yeah, this is an Oregon team that, yeah, when you look at advanced metrics or you look at Vegas odds or Sagarin ratings or Phil Steele, Utah is ranked way ahead of Oregon on all of those. And
yeah,
Utah was my pick preseason to win the Pac-12. They're still going to be in the Pac-12 championship game, barring something crazy. But overall, this is a game where for Oregon, they're going to have to play really good football. Since Cam Rising took over with Utah as the starting quarterback, they've been terrific. I understand why Utah's favored, but I'm kind of with you that I think Oregon will find a way to win this game. I like the way Anthony Brown's been playing recently. Verdell, when he went down, there were questions about could Travis Dye be that 20 carry a game back? He certainly is capable of that at this point. And then defensively, these are two really good defenses. The 58.5 might be a lot of points in this game. You might want to look for an under, because I think if Oregon wins this game, it's probably in the 20s. You know, it's probably something like 28-23 or 24-21. So I'll give the Ducks, I'll give them credit on this one. I picked against them in the UCLA game a few weeks ago, and I like them to come up, show that they're a top 5 team, and beat this Utah team. Because if they lose this game, there will very well be a rematch in a couple weeks in Vegas for the Pac-12 championship game. But for Oregon, all their playoff hopes are ahead, but they have to keep winning, and I'll trust that they get it done.
Yeah, we will see. Let's go to our third ranked matchup of the week. Number 21 Arkansas, coming off of a nice win last week, heads to number 2 Alabama. Alabama, 3 touchdown favorites here. 3:30 Eastern on CBS, a big CBS game. And Arkansas broke my heart last week. LSU was in that game. They got it to overtime. That interception in the end zone killed my upset pick. Good for Arkansas. They're having a really nice season. Alabama is one of this team that just feels like, you know, it's not all clicking. They should still win this game, but this is not the dominant Alabama that we've known over the last 5 years to a decade.
It's not, but I feel like this is a pretty solid matchup for them in that Alabama can stop the run pretty well. I think the pass defense is not quite as good as it's been the last couple years because there's not that Patrick Surtain type of cornerback on the roster. Arkansas is going to run the football, and they're going to, relatively speaking, stop the passing game. So for Alabama, they're going to have to run the ball better. We saw against LSU, they couldn't run the football. You know, we saw against A&M, they were able to run the football, but they just weren't balanced enough defensively to get stops late in that game. I think things will click this week. I expect Bryce Young in this offense to really do well, and for Alabama to run the ball. If they can't get over 150 rush yards in this game, that kind of shows me that they're not going to beat Georgia. If they can get the run game going in Arkansas and then pass based off that, they should win by over the 20.5. I'm going to buy into Alabama. My best bet is Alabama this week, minus the 20.5. I like them to show up, play well, and kind of do the same things that Georgia did against Arkansas earlier this year, where Arkansas, you know what you're getting. You just have to be able to step up and show up and play well against it. And good teams can do that. So I'll say the tide roll, maybe not in the first half where everything clicks, but I think in the second half they separate, and they'll win this game by 24, 27 points.
Okay, I like it. Arkansas has been that up and down team this year. Next, we have SMU, the little bit disappointing SMU, two losses in their last 3 weeks versus number five Cincinnati, 3:30 Eastern on ESPN. Cincinnati 11.5 point favorites here. Man, Cincinnati, I know that they need to put on the style points, and they haven't really done it. It feels like you get this every single year. You have that power, that group of five team that, you know, they blow the doors off everybody to start the season, but people start to figure them out. It gets a little bit harder. And 11.5, while it's a respectable line, like you want them to beat this team by three touchdowns to really show if they're going to be if they're going to try and be contenders. But I just don't know how I'm feeling about Cincinnati these last couple weeks.
Yeah, I think that up until last week, I thought last week against USF was their best performance of the past month. But yeah, up until then, it was shaky, especially in that Tulsa game. They were very shaky. I don't think the Navy game is quite as bad as people were saying because they moved apart late in that game and actually had a chance for an outright cover. But for SMU, we know that they can pass the football. And for Cincinnati, they have some of the best cornerbacks in all of college football. You know, I think Sauce Gardner will be a first-round pick next year. They have great edge rushers. Myjai Sanders will be a borderline, probably a day two guy, but a guy that could go in like the top 40 early second round. But for Cincinnati, you're right. This is a real statement game. It would have been great for them if SMU was 9-1 or 10-0, and this could have been a top 25 matchup. But overall, I like Cincinnati to get this win. I think they're still on pace to go into that Houston game undefeated and then have that be for everything, potentially for a playoff berth. But for the SMU Mustangs, again, I mean, you look at Mordecai's stats this season, and they are terrific. This is a guy that, you know, is leading the nation in touchdown passes, 37, or maybe he's certainly leading the nation in terms of, you know, top end groups. I think maybe the quarterback at Western Kentucky might have passed him, but Tanner Mordecai has been awesome. I love this receiving core, but I just think matchup wise, if your strength is passing the ball, that goes to Cincinnati's strength. So I'll say the Bearcats win this, probably cover, but it should be around that number.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You kind of look at, you talked about Houston. We need Houston to kind of win out and get to that championship game in the 20th ranked right now. I think they're 24. So they get a couple more wins. They get UConn, which they could blow them up by 100 and might still drop in the rankings. But at the end of the day, it becomes undefeated Cincinnati against the top 20 Houston. And if, you know, if Oregon beats Utah, then it'd be one loss Oregon playing against a top 20-ish Utah or Arizona State, depending on which one gets in. What's the better resume? I think Cincinnati still doesn't get in over a one-loss Pac-12 team, so they really have that uphill battle, and I just don't see it happening. But we'll see. They need to win this week and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, they really need to, for Cincinnati, they need Georgia to beat Alabama. Because if that happens, I think the path starts to make it a much more clear path where even if Ohio State and Oregon win out, you could be that fourth team. But the problem will be is if Georgia loses to Bama, they're both clearly getting in, and then there's almost no path for Cincinnati unless multiple Power Five conference teams with one loss start losing.
We're going to see some intrigue in these next couple weeks. All right, let's go to number 10, Wake Forest, your Demon Deacons, 9-1 at Clemson, 7-3. Clemson with a nice win last week, and Clemson 4.5 point favorites here. They're finding their mojo. This still isn't a great offensive team, which Wake Forest actually is, but that Wake Forest defense is such a sieve that they think that Clemson can put up some points. Over under 56.5 here.
Yeah, this is strength on strength, weakness on weakness, where it's Wake Forest offense against Clemson's defense. Those are absolutely the strengths of both teams. And then on the other end, it's Clemson's poor offense against Wake Forest's dreadful defense. And a lot of times when this stuff happens, I think you just go with whoever has the most talent overall, and that's still Clemson. So I
Sure.
think the Clemson Tigers win this game, and if they win this, there's still hope that they could win the Atlantic Division. They would need Wake Forest to fall next week and then have to, you know, because Clemson, this is their final conference game. So if they
Right.
lose this game, they're done. But if they win this game, if Wake Forest goes and loses their final game, then Clemson would be in the discussion with NC State. It becomes some sort of tiebreaker system. But I think Clemson does win this game. I expect Wake Forest to ultimately get to Charlotte and win next week. But overall, the Clemson Tigers have the talent. defensively, they have no answers for a lot of teams. You have to think that they won't have many answers for Clemson either. So I'll go with Dabo and his staff that they come up with a good game plan. Now, if Clemson, offensively, it's been bad all year. If they only score like 21 points in this game, then that's an awful sign. And Tony Franklin, the OC, might be on his way out anyways. But that might be the final nail in the coffin. So
yeah.
Who do you
think? If you got Army putting up 56 and you're only putting up 3 touchdowns, you got a problem.
Right, and Wake Forest right now, if they win this, they're in. But again, next week, I'm looking at their schedule. They're at Boston College. I think that's a very winnable game. But if they lose that, then they would have 2 conference losses. Clemson would have 2 conference losses. And then NC State still has Syracuse and North Carolina. If they win out, they all have 2 losses and they beat each other. So then it would go to whoever I believe the highest ranked team is in the college football playoff of the 3. So there's still a lot to play for if you're Clemson at this moment.
Yeah, but the ACC is pretty much the only conference, major Power 5 conference, that's out of the discussion for the playoff, right?
It is, yes. Yeah, there's no, I can't imagine there's a path for Wake Forest to get back into the playoff mix. They might get up to like 5 or 6 or 7, but that would be about as high as they can go.
Yeah, I would agree. Okay, moving on, we have Iowa State at number 13, Oklahoma. Oklahoma suffering that ugly defeat last week against Baylor. Iowa State, they're kind of win one, lose one this whole season, it feels like. Noon Eastern on Fox. Oklahoma, slight favorite here, 4 points at home at Gaylord Memorial Stadium. Who do you like in this one, Ken?
I'm going to go Iowa State. You mentioned about win one, lose one. I like the Cyclones. This is my upset pick, plus 145. They just always match up well with Oklahoma. They beat them last year. In the Big 12 title game, they lost to them, but they had multiple opportunities in that game. If not for some really poor red zone decisions by Brock Purdy, I think they win that game. And then on top of it, this is just an Oklahoma team, as we said. They just haven't been focused. Offensively, they're down. And defensively, Iowa State should be able to manage and do what they want against that Oklahoma defense. So I'm going to say for the second straight year, and I think 3 out of 4 years it would be, that Iowa State beats Oklahoma. And if they win this game, that absolutely knocks Oklahoma out of any playoff conversation. Iowa State, probably not enough to get back in the mix for a Big 12 championship. But if you can beat Norman, if you can beat Oklahoma in Norman, that can sell a lot to your program. And again, is Matt Campbell a guy that's gone in 2 weeks? He might be if some jobs open up. So we'll have to see. But overall, he's done a great job there. This year has been a slight disappointment. But if you can beat OU, that's not a bad way to kind of get close to ending your season.
Man, just a quick tangent on Matt Campbell. Like, fine. Yeah, he's 6-4 this year. What did he get? He lost 3 games last year. He lost 6 games the year before. 2018, he lost 4 or 5 games. I get it. He's good, and Iowa State's a tough place to coach, but I just think we pumped the brakes on him a little bit. You know what? I'm fine if he ends up somewhere else. I'm not sold on him for USC. I think he could do great things at USC. Is he going to win a national championship? I don't know.
See, that's here's the reason why I buy into Matt Campbell a lot is I look at him as first of all, he's a guy that's done it now at multiple programs. He did well at Toledo. He's done well at Iowa State. He's been a coach for almost a decade as a head coach, which is valuable. Like a guy like Aranda, he's only been there 2 years. It's kind of hard to say how good of a head coach he'll be long term. We know what Matt Campbell's capable of. The other thing, too, is he performs well in big games. Like, he crushed Oregon last year in the Fiesta Bowl. He's beaten Lincoln Riley twice. He beat Texas several times over the years when they've had more talent. He beat a top 20 Oklahoma State team this year. And at Iowa State, they've never had a team that's been a consistent 500 team. I mean, he's taken them to multiple bowl games. I think he's taken them to more bowl games in like the last 5 years than they had like for their like entire history almost. And he's been top 25 consistently. Like, I look at him as like, I think Matt Campbell's one of the best 10 coaches in college football. He might even be one of the best 5 coaches, in my opinion. I think he's an elite coach that if he's on a national program, I have almost no doubt he's going to be capable of winning big there. Where some other coaches, I just have some doubt. Like, Matt Campbell's doing everything he can at Iowa State, but if you go 9-4 at Iowa State, that's like going 12-1 at an Ohio State. Like, maybe 13-0.
That's
like,
fair.
You can't do much better than that.
You sold me a little bit on him. You did say he's a big game coach. The problem is that you go to the Pac-12, not many big games. You got to worry about the easy games that he doesn't always win.
Like I just think if it's up to Aranda or Campbell, I would take Campbell 10 out of 10 times, and I think he would be the coach at a USC or Florida or Miami or Penn State if that opens, that is going to do really well and probably elevate any of those programs.
I'll take Fickell. How about that? Okay, let's go to rapid fire games. We'll stay in the Big 12. Number 11 Baylor, coming off a huge win against Oklahoma, heads to Kansas State. And Ken, this line is back and forth. You have it at -1. I've seen ESPN use Caesars at +1. Kansas State, sure, great, good, but man, Baylor coming off a really nice win, not getting a lot of respect.
Yeah, Baylor coming off a really good win. Of course, lost the week before to TCU when they fired their coach. Kansas State's just a consistent. That's a coach that some programs should look into, as Chris Klieman, came
Yeah.
from North Dakota State. He's done well at K-State. And, maybe he's not as attractive a hire as some of these other big names. But, like, if Miami opens and Miami ends up saying, this guy's a program builder, I could see worse coaches than Chris Klieman coming down there. So he's been consistent. If he gets this win, Kansas State would be 8-3 going into their final game of the year
Yeah,
with a
man.
chance at 9 wins. I'm with you. I think Baylor does win this game. Baylor's looked the part. Their defense has stepped up. And offensively now, Bo Hannon's a really good dual threat quarterback. They run the ball well. They pass the ball enough to win games. Like they're not a team that's going to throw for 300 yards very often. But I think it's a good matchup for them. This will be a fun game. And if you look at this over under, a 49.5 total in the Big 12 is saying something. So
Oh,
there's
yeah.
a reason that both of these teams are looked at in Vegas as being pretty good. So,
Here's the thing though, Kent. Where's the high flying offense at any Big 12 teams right now? It's not at Oklahoma State. It's not at Oklahoma. It was at Texas for the first little bit. It's not there anymore. It's not Kansas State. It's not really Baylor. Like, there's the high flying offenses of the Big 12 are a little bit dormant this year.
that's a good point. Yeah, they really, you don't have that great offense, because even Oklahoma State, they're 9-1, but they're doing it on the ground. They're not
Right.
necessarily doing it through the air, which is when they were having guys win Biletnikoffs, several times over the last
The most
15
high-flying
years.
offense has been Kansas against Texas last week.
Right. With the walk-on fullback who's 5 foot
Who
nine,
had,
two
yeah, and
sixty
who
or
had
whatever.
never like caught a ball, didn't have a single college football stat. Anyway, staying in the Big 12, we're going to get number 9 Oklahoma State, the under-the-radar team. They're so under the radar that everyone's calling them under the radar that they're back on the radar. At Texas Tech, 6-4. Texas Tech, one of those weird, we fired our coach, we got our next guy already in place, and they're having like a fine season, and they'll go to a bowl game.
Mike
Oklahoma State, 10.5.
Gundy just keeps doing it. This is
Yeah,
a
he
guy that
really
just,
is.
you want to talk about under the radar, he just wins 9, 10, 11 games every year. And I understand his big hiccup is that he doesn't beat Oklahoma too often, but a lot of people don't beat Oklahoma too often. So I love their chances this week. I do think this might be closer than the line. Texas Tech has played surprisingly better lately. I know you
Yeah.
saw last week they made that 62-yard walk-off against Iowa State to beat them and upset the Cyclones. So I think this will be closer than 10.5, but I do like Oklahoma State to get the win.
Yeah, this should be a fun one. And like you said, this is a team that just pounds it on the ground and has a great defense. That's fun to see at the Big 12. Okay, now let's go to the ACC, where Virginia, coming off a loss to your Notre Dame Fighting Irish, heads to Pittsburgh, number 18 team in the country, 3:30 Eastern on ESPN2. Pitt coming off that nice Thursday night win last week, with a good little cover there. So, who do you like in this game?
I think Pitt, and the fact that this line keeps going up, is a good sign for Pitt. Now, Brennan Armstrong was one of the most exciting players in the country to watch. Got hurt against BYU, did not
Yeah.
play against Notre Dame. I think this line is indicative of the fact that people don't expect him to play again this week. And if you have broken ribs, it's hard to believe you can play quarterback with that injury. For Pitt, everything, if Pitt wins this game, they win the Coastal Division. So they're looked at as a team that's probably expected to win. Although, on the other hand, if Virginia wins this game, they're a Virginia Tech win away next week of winning the division. So this is a huge game for the Coastal, but I like the Panthers to get their ninth win and get it done. And the fact that this line has gone from, I think it opened at 11 up to 14, I think a lot of people are also on the Panthers this week. But Pitt last week, a little fortunate to hang on against Carolina. They were up big in that game, completely choked in the second half, and then it was a monsoon in overtime where Pitt found a way to win and win ugly. But hey, if you're Pitt, winning ugly is completely fine in November when you have the lead in your division.
Yeah, exactly. You're about to go to a conference championship game. Is it true that Miami still hasn't been to a conference championship game, or they just haven't won the conference?
They went one time. So Miami played Clemson a few years back, but they have not won an ACC championship.
That's
So
right.
they've only
Mind
been the
blown.
one. So yeah, 17 years in the ACC and one division title and zero conference championships.
Jeez. When you got Pitt going more often than Miami, you got a problem in your conference. All right, let's move on to our fun as hell team, Ole Miss and Kent. I hate to see it. It's when you get the SEC teams playing the cream puff FCS school. Oh, wait. Oh, no, they're playing Vanderbilt. They're still 36.5-point favorites. Vanderbilt somehow has 2 wins this year. And man, that is an embarrassing program. But Ole Miss going to come in, going to run up the score on them.
Yeah, Ole Miss also trying to play for a Sugar Bowl berth. I mean, obviously, if Bama loses to Georgia and Bama's not in the playoff, they'll go to the Sugar Bowl if they're that second team. But right now, Ole Miss trying to get to a New Year's Six, which would be a hell of a year for them. And for Lane Kiffin, I can't wait till next Thursday, Thanksgiving night. We can almost skip this matchup because we know what's going to happen and just slightly look ahead to next Thursday night
That
on
egg bowl.
Thanksgiving. The Egg Bowl and Mississippi State is alive and well. Will
Hell yeah.
Rogers, the freshman
Ranked.
quarterback, is like breaking SEC records every week. And Matt Corral is still in the Heisman discussion and very much Ole Miss in play for a New Year's Six. So that's going to be an Egg Bowl with a lot on the stake. And both coaches that you just kind of love to watch on the sideline. So for Ole Miss, yes, you'll get your ninth win this week. You'll beat Vanderbilt. I don't know if you'll beat them by 37, but chances are you might. And then next week, the Egg Bowl on Thursday night is setting up to be a great game, and I can't wait to watch that.
Yeah, so I mean, we cheated a little bit. This team is too good to be a fun as hell
Well, they
team. You
were
want your
unranked
fun
to
as hell
start the
team.
year, though. That's the
It
thing.
is that's true. You want your fun as hell team to be, 5-5, 6-4 right now and just putting up 60 points a game. But man, they looked awesome against Texas A&M last week for, for a team that was an underdog. They've put together such a great season, and the fact that you're getting Lane Kiffin back to USC rumors and murmurs is just mind-blowing where he's come from. So love that they are fun as hell. They really are. They got a little bit too good for us this year. We have to find that team that's middle of the pack a little bit more, that puts up a billion points.
You know who
Let's
it
jump
might
on.
be? Maybe next year we just go all in on the fun as hell Mike Leeches, because that's almost
Oh
the
man.
epitome of the type of team you're going for.
Yeah, but they'll put up 60 or they'll put up 3. You don't know with those guys. That's
Yeah, in the SEC now, you're
the
right. That there is that little bit of unbalance where, like, if you get the right defense, they could just dominate them.
Yeah, it really is. I'm looking back at some of these teams that we talked about today, and if there is any like really middle. You know who actually would have been a fun as hell, except for they're in the SEC too, so they get goose egged every once in a while, is an Arkansas team. That's kind of the fun as hell, where they're putting up big numbers 1 week and just getting blown their doors off the next. But
But if we could have predicted that, as Arkansas was expected to be dead last in the SEC
yeah.
West, that would have been a hell of a prediction. Yeah, there's some good candidates, and next year I'm sure we'll find some worthy ones. I mean, realistically, the team this year that, all year has been fun as hell would have been like, a UTSA type that just
Hell
oversucceeded
yeah.
and is
Yeah.
10-0. But the Roadrunners last week, man, that was a good live bet. I took them live. They were down 7. I got a -3.5, and from that moment on, they turned around and looked like the real Roadrunners team.
Oh, man, I was out for a run. It was about 85, almost 90 degrees here in LA. I'm out for a run. It was so hot that I take a break. I look down, and you just texted me and said, "Hey, I'm taking them live." So I jumped on it, got them live. Then I looked, and I had accidentally done Texas State, not UTSA. So I took Texas State 2 ways. They ended up losing, but I did still get that -3.5, won my money back there. So it ended up being a push. I got a little bit of action on it, but I was bummed that I hit the wrong Texas State.
Well, I don't know if
So
you saw what happened though, because again, I only put the game on in the third quarter, and
I didn't
that's when I
watch it
made the
all. I
live
was
bet.
running.
The Southern Miss quarterbacks got hurt, and they were down. They were playing Frank Gore Jr., the son of Frank Gore.
Yeah.
He's a running back. They were playing him at quarterback in the second half and having him actually throw passes. So they didn't have a scholarship quarterback for the final like 20 minutes of that game, and UTSA took quite advantage of it
Oh,
and
yeah.
really just kind of lit them up for the last 20 minutes. So I think we were a little fortunate there.
Yeah, that was I did not get to watch any of it, but I did make a couple bucks off it, so I'll take it. All right, let's go to teams we're riding this season. Army with a nice 63-10 win over Bucknell. They now 37.5-point favorites over UMass. Book that. They are going to run it up on them. That's one thing Army can do well this year, and that is score points. They're working their way up to that over under of 8. We're trying to get 1 win closer. Your Wake Forest Demon Deacons, we already talked about, 4.5 point underdogs against Clemson. Let's move on to our best bets. I'm staying in the Pac-12 for both my best bet and my upset. Oregon +3 at Utah. I like that. And then for my upset, USC versus UCLA. I have a bone to pick real quick. I put this on there for two reasons. First, I think USC kind of has a little bit of pride and wins this at home this week. But I don't like that they messed around with the schedule this week where USC is playing UCLA a week early. It's always a Thanksgiving game or the last game of the season. But for some reason, because BYU had to move some stuff around, they're playing BYU next week after Thanksgiving, and then they have that rescheduled game against Cal. So two more games left with playing the UCLA rivalry game really kind of tickles me the wrong way. Still, I think we get the win at home this week.
Yeah, it is odd, and I didn't really think about that because I know, like, with Notre Dame ending at Stanford or SC every other year, that becomes the game. But, yeah, the fact that the BYU game is next week is very odd, but trying to schedule that team sometimes is difficult. I can see the Trojans winning. I mean, it's a home game. UCLA has not been particularly great the last 5-6 weeks. And then for Oregon, Utah, you're getting points with a top five team against a borderline top 25. So anytime you can do that, it's not the worst thing in the world. Alabama is my best bet. I feel like they're going to roll in the second half and pull away from Arkansas. And then Iowa State +145. I like them in Norman to get the win against Oklahoma. And it's just, it's a Matt Campbell thing. I like him. I think he steps up in these games. And this team has a lot of good offensive firepower against an Oklahoma defense that's one of the worst they'll probably face all year.
Okay, let's move on to every game in 60 seconds. We took a beating last week, 39-18. We have 63 games this week. We're 538-150 on the season, 78%. Lead us off.
Ball State.
NIU.
Louisville.
Reno.
Louisiana Tech.
Wazoo.
Fighting Holgersons.
LA Aztecs.
Clemson.
Tar Heels.
BC.
Mountaineers.
Cyclones.
Boilermakers.
Buckeyes.
Penn State.
UGA.
Golden Flashes.
Kentucky.
Cowbells.
Gig'em.
My Black Knights of the Hudson.
Green Wave.
Hilltoppers.
Chanticleers.
Hawkeyes.
Go Irish.
UW.
Row the Boat.
Go Blue.
Badgers.
Georgia State.
Pitt Panthers.
Roll Tide.
Bearcats.
Pirates.
Blue Raiders.
App State.
The undefeated top 25 Roadrunners.
The Herd.
NC State.
The Gators.
Horned Frogs.
Fight On.
The Miners.
Golden Hurricane.
BYU.
UCF.
Raging Cajuns.
Sikkim.
Berkeley Bears.
War Eagle.
Mean Green.
Rocky Top.
Fighting Kiffins.
Quack Attack.
The U.
The Pokes.
Gold Tigers.
Utah State.
Boise.
The Beavs.
Colorado State.
Okay, they're my best bet, and they're the last hope for the Pac-12, so let's have Oregon play us out. Go Ducks.